If you've been listening to this show for a while, then you know that my path to getting pregnant was not as easy as I had hoped it would be. I just thought I would stop taking birth control pills and kind of snap my fingers and get pregnant because that's what I saw everybody around me doing. But the truth is, my journey was much more complicated than that and involves a lot of time and heartbreak and confusion and just not really knowing what was going on with my body. And it took over a year for me to even get tested and diagnosed with PCOS before being able to start a treatment protocol to try and help me get pregnant. And while I'm really grateful to be on the other side of that journey and I've made peace with where I've ended up with it, I still think about it all the time. Why did I have to waste so much time not knowing that there were so many things I could be doing every single day to optimize my fertility? Which is why I have created my free masterclass, Why Just Getting Off the Pill Isn't Enough, 4 Steps to Optimize Your Fertility. This information is actually life-changing, and it could be the difference between someone going into their fertility journey armed with knowledge, which will help them get pregnant more easily and more quickly, or not. And I really want this information to be accessible to everybody. I know if you love this podcast, if you love this episode in particular, you are going to love the masterclass because we go much deeper. We're able to get on live. You're able to ask me questions. It's really, really amazing. And if you want to grab a spot because there are limited seats available, head over to the link in the show notes and you can register. The masterclass is going to be 1 hour, but I have 2 options of when you are able to sign up for. It's going to be on May 26th and May 30th at 1 p.m. Again, you don't have to show up both days. Pick the day that works best for you because I would love to see you live, love to see you there, love to be able to answer your questions about fertility and just help you feel as empowered as possible starting or continuing this process of trying to get pregnant. So I can't wait to see you there. And with that, let's dive into this jam-packed episode. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the show. I can't believe I haven't done this episode yet. I feel like this has been a long time coming. And today we're talking all about how to get pregnant when you have PCOS, all the things that you need to know. And if you have listened to the first episode of this podcast and you've heard my story from the very beginning, you know the only reason that I really ever started caring about health and nutrition and taking care of my body was so that I could become a mother. And I was really struggling to get pregnant because I had PCOS and wasn't ovulating properly. And as much as I have, you know, come really far since getting my PCOS diagnosis and seeing a huge value in just really taking care of my body really well for me and appreciating treating my body for the right way for the long term for longevity, at the end of the day, I still feel like fertility is the biggest motivator for me. And if I didn't want to continue growing my family, I'm not sure that I would have the motivation to do some of the things that I do. I think that the fertility piece is a really, really strong motivator for a lot of people because when you're struggling with it, it's so deeply painful in a way that, you know, maybe other health issues aren't. Like if you feel tired all the time or if you struggle with your periods, like, yeah, it definitely impacts your life. But if you're, you know, if you're in this place, you know, I don't have to tell you when you're trying to get pregnant and you want a baby and it's not happening, it is so killer. And I know for me, it really took over my life in so many negative ways. It really affected just like the way that I related to myself, my inner dialogue, my relationship with myself. It obviously played out a lot in my marriage. It played out a lot socially. I had a lot of social anxiety going out and talking to other women who were either already pregnant or moms, or I was constantly afraid someone was going to tell me they were pregnant. It was really horrible. But what I did find to be super helpful, even before I ended up getting pregnant, was just learning a lot more about my body and about PCOS and going in with some actions that I could take that would optimize my fertility. That helps me feel a lot less miserable and just feel a little bit more proactive. And even though we can never fully control the situation, it's kind of like, you know, we're dealt this card of having PCOS and you can't do anything about the cards you've been dealt, but you can learn how to play the game and you feel a lot more in control and proactive and empowered when you know the rules of the game. So what we're going to talk about in this episode is really just understanding the basics of what you need to know in order to get pregnant with PCOS. We're going to talk about what needs to happen in order for you to get pregnant. What are the common obstacles that arise for women with PCOS when it comes to getting pregnant? We're going to talk about how to remove or get around those obstacles. And we'll talk about both the conventional medicine approach as well as a more natural and holistic approach. We're going to talk about both. And then I'm going to answer the question that you guys sent in. I asked on my Instagram yesterday, I told you guys I'm recording an episode all about how to get pregnant with PCOS. And I asked you guys to send in whatever questions you had about this topic. You sent in really good questions. I got tons of questions specifically about, you know, how to know when it's time to use conventional medicine and how we can tie food and nutrition into fertility treatment. So I will definitely be talking about that. But let's start back at the very beginning. Because I know for a lot of people, we don't even really understand the process of getting pregnant in the first place. And, you know, I think about it when I was trying to first get pregnant, I just thought like you stop taking the pill and then eventually you get pregnant. And it's kind of this like passive thing almost, you know, you're not really doing anything specific other than, you know, obviously being intimate. But what you actually need in order to get pregnant is a number of different processes in your body to happen and develop at the right time. So let's go through those things. First of all, you need an egg cell, okay? In theory, a woman is producing an egg cell every single month or on every single cycle, but we don't just need any egg cell. We need a fully mature, good quality egg cell. And there are a lot of different parts to the egg that we need to be good quality. So let me explain what I mean. When I teach my workshops and courses on this, I show people pictures of what an egg cell looks like because I think it's really good to have the visual. So bear with me. I know I'm just in your ears today, but there are all these different parts of the egg cell. Okay. So if you zoom in, if you look under a microscope, what is in an egg cell? There's a bunch of different pieces. So one thing that we have are chromosomes, which is where we contain all of the DNA or the genetic material. And that's kind of like the instruction manual for what a cell is supposed to do. And that cell, an egg cell, is supposed to grow into a full-on human. So it needs to know how to build a liver and a brain and bones and, you know, a digestive system and a respiratory system and an endocrine system. There's a lot of instruction code that we need. And if there's been any damage to the chromosomes, that can affect the way that the egg cell develops. It could also affect the egg even getting fertilized in the first place. And it can certainly affect miscarriage because a lot of times miscarriage is caused by chromosomal damage. That accounts for about 60% of miscarriages. So we need good quality eggs with intact chromosomes and the correct number of chromosomes. We also want eggs that have really robust mitochondria. So if you remember from like ninth grade bio, learning about the mitochondria, maybe you remember this phrase, the powerhouse of the cell. I know that's like, there's all these memes about the powerhouse of the cell. Like, why do we learn about the powerhouse of the cell and nobody knows how to do taxes? But the truth is, it is important to understand what your mitochondria are and how they work. They are basically the little battery packs that power a cell. And the reason they're important in egg cells is because when you get pregnant, your egg cell, which now becomes a fertilized egg cell or an embryo, it has a lot of growing to do. It starts off as this teeny, teeny, tiny, so small, we can't even see it. Little embryo and has to grow into a baby. And even though the baby isn't that big at the end of the day, it's a tremendous amount of growth. Like it's growing exponentially every single day. And that egg cell is only able to continue to grow and develop when you have mitochondria that are intact and help power the cell and power all of that growth and development. Think about it kind of as like If you have a phone charger that's broken, you know, when the wires are all fraying and the outside of the charger is like falling apart and then you can't charge your phone is not going to do what you need to do if it dies, right? So it's kind of the same thing with our egg cells. If the mitochondria are not working properly, they can't power the growth of the baby that we need. And that can also, unfortunately, be another cause of either the egg not developing properly or miscarriages. Another piece that we need for the egg cell is the cell membrane. So that's like the outer gate of the cell that keeps things in the cell inside and prevents things from going outside or allows certain things in and out. So it allows certain nutrients in. One of the main things it has to allow in is also a sperm cell, right? There's no baby happening if we don't have sperm present. But if the cell membrane is damaged, the cell membrane is really important because it's kind of like the door that allows other things to come in. And I think of it like a lock and a key situation. So if the sperm cell is the key, a good quality sperm cell should be able to fit into an egg cell. But if the lock on the door has been smashed with a hammer and has been completely broken, even the right key can't get inside. It's like the door is jammed shut. So if the cell membrane has been damaged, we're also not going to be able to fertilize that egg cell in the first place. Part of the reason that egg cells can get damaged, when we talk about egg quality, I talk about egg quality all the time. This is what we're talking about. A good quality egg has the right amount of chromosomes that have not been damaged, good quality mitochondria that work well and power the cell, and a cell membrane that is intact. And what you eat, what you are exposed to, what you're doing in terms of stress management and exercise and supplementation for about 3 to 6 months before you ovulate, that is going to have a massive impact on your egg quality. And the level of inflammation in your body, if you have any kind of like gut microbiome issues or inflammation or unbalanced sugar, that can all lead to inflammation around the eggs and damage egg quality. So the first thing that any woman needs, and this is not just women with PCOS, any woman who wants to get pregnant, she needs egg cells and she needs good quality egg cells. Once the egg cells are there, we need to ovulate. So ovulation is when we take that egg cell out of the ovary, we pop it out and send it to the fallopian tube. And if it's in the fallopian tube and then we have sperm present, that's where the cell can actually get fertilized. If you're doing IVF, this can happen outside of the body. But if we're just talking about how to get pregnant naturally, we need ovulation to occur, okay? Sperm is not going into the ovary itself. It has to go into the fallopian tube and the egg has to come out of the ovary. The third thing that we need if we're trying to get pregnant naturally is cervical mucus. So you might have heard me talk about this in some of the episodes that I've done with fertility awareness method educators, with Talia Friedman or with PESI. So you can go back and listen to those episodes where we talk a lot more about cervical mucus. But basically, cervical mucus is the fluid that comes out of the vagina and it looks different at different points in your cycle. And right before you ovulate, you have this clear, stretchy, almost looks like egg white sort of situation. When your cervical mucus is like that, that allows and facilitates the transportation of sperm. It also helps filter out bad sperm that are not good swimmers, but we need to be producing cervical mucus because that allows the sperm to swim all the way up to the fallopian tube. So if you're not producing cervical mucus, you know, that's, again, that could be another obstacle. The fourth thing we need is the sperm cell, which we could do a whole podcast episode on sperm quality and sperm health. Maybe that will happen at one point, but that's not this episode. But you do obviously need sperm in order to get pregnant. If you have good quality eggs and you ovulate and you have cervical mucus, you will not get pregnant if there's no sperm there. So fourth thing we need is sperm. The fifth thing we need, once the sperm cell has come to the egg and you have actually fertilized the egg cell, is implantation. So that fertilized egg cell is going to travel down into the uterus. And we need that little cell to stick into the uterine lining or what's called implantation. And in order to have that happen, we need a really healthy and thick uterine lining. It actually needs to be a certain measurement. If it's under 7 millimeters thick and the uterine lining is really thin, you cannot get pregnant. Okay, this is how IUDs work actually. They thin your uterine lining so that it doesn't necessarily prevent ovulation. Some IUDs do prevent, some don't. But if you do ovulate and the cell gets fertilized, you still won't get pregnant because it can't implant into the uterus. So implantation is the next thing that needs to happen. And then six is normal continued growth and development. And a lot of this does have to go back to egg quality because It's the instruction code and the mitochondria and the nutrient density of the yolk sac that are really going to help power the development for the first 10 weeks. You only have your placenta take over and form the umbilical cord that's going to help feed the baby through that at 10 weeks. Before that, it's all up to the egg cell and the sperm cell really to help the baby develop. And then we need to have continued health in pregnancy, right? There are a number of other complications and things that can come up, things like gestational diabetes or preeclampsia or all sorts of other things, which again, I'm not going to really get into pregnancy complications in this episode, but we basically need those six things to occur in order to get pregnant naturally and have a baby. Now, when it comes to PCOS, there are a number of obstacles at multiple points in that process. And I think the reason it's so important to understand this is because when you're thinking of a strategy of how do I get pregnant, especially if I have PCOS, some of the conventional methods address certain parts of this process, but not others. And some things with diet and lifestyle might affect some parts, but not others. And so it's really important to actually understand, like, okay, if I'm going to go pay a lot of money to do IVF or to do a round of letrozole or Clomid, like, I want you to understand what you're doing and what you're also not doing when you do a treatment like that. So let's talk about the obstacles that come up when you are trying to get pregnant with PCOS. So first of all, is you're not necessarily ovulating or not ovulating very often. And I know there's so much focus on periods, right? With PCOS, we talk about irregular periods. The truth is we don't care so much about the period itself. We care about ovulation. Periods just come after you've ovulated and your body realizes it's not pregnant. But the main event of the cycle is ovulation. And women with PCOS who have really long cycles, you know, if you're only getting a period every 3 months, then that means you're only ovulating once every 3 months. And that means you're ovulating like four times a year. You can only get pregnant right before and during ovulation. You usually have like a 5-day fertile window per cycle. So if you are having four cycles a year, you only have four chances to get pregnant every single year, which is just a lot less than the average person who is maybe cycling once a month. They have 12 opportunities to get pregnant a year. You just start out with less. And it can't happen if you're not ovulating. So if you're someone who's like, I only get a period once every 9 months or once every 18 months, then you have even less opportunity. And we need to get that egg out of the ovary in order to fertilize the egg. So that's the first piece. And we'll talk a lot about the different hormone imbalances that can prevent ovulation or delay ovulation. But the second obstacle that comes up is egg quality. So again, I talked a little bit about this already. We need really good quality eggs in terms of having an intact cell membrane, mitochondria, chromosomes. And when we have a lot of inflammation around the egg cell or in the ovaries themselves, that causes your cell to release these little compounds called free radicals. And free radicals, I like to think of them as little pinballs. If you ever played pinball, I played a lot of pinball growing up because my orthodontist had a pinball machine in his waiting room and I had braces for 7 years because my teeth were so messed up. So I'm like actually underratedly amazing at pinball because I had years and years of practice. But anyways, I think of these free radicals as pinballs when you're just like shooting them around and they go to the upper level and they just start kind of like bouncing off the walls, banging into everything. You don't even have to be touching the game. They're just like bouncing all over the place. That's what free radicals are like. They're technically, if we want to get a little more scientific than pinball, they're unstable molecules that are not balanced in terms of protons and electrons. So they're just zipping all over the place and they cause chemical damage to whatever they bump into. They're just like a bull in a china shop. So when you have that in the ovaries or in the uterus, or it could be in any part of the body, that's really what's happening when we talk about inflammation, is that there's cellular damage occurring because of free radicals. But especially when it's in our reproductive organs, we run into a lot of trouble. Now, let's say this happens in your liver, okay? It's a problem because then you're going to have cells in your liver that are not working properly. But you know what? Our bodies are pretty resilient. If you have enough other cells that are still intact, okay, the liver is going to be able to get some level of functioning done. The problem with egg cells is that we really only have one shot per cycle. So if you have a poor quality egg, there's not much that you could do about it. And it's not like we could tap into your store and get hundreds of eggs out of there because you do have lots of teeny tiny little egg follicles in there. We have millions that we start off with when we're born, but we only pick one per cycle to fully grow. and fully develop. And I'll get back to this when I talk about IVF, because I know some of you might be thinking, well, if I do an egg retrieval, we actually do have more chances. We are getting more eggs. But if those eggs are not good quality because they've been damaged by this inflammation, then, you know, having 15 poor quality eggs doesn't really set you up for a high success rate in terms of getting pregnant and staying pregnant. And of course, the ultimate goal is staying pregnant, right? We don't want to get pregnant and, God forbid, have miscarriages or stillborns. We are trying to get pregnant with healthy embryos, because healthy embryos turn into healthy babies. So I want to just touch on some of the things that play a role in damaging egg quality. Some of the biggest things are stress and alcohol. Alcohol is really, really not good for our body in general, but can be really, really damaging to our fertility. It's something that I would say, you know, with food, we want to find a little bit more moderation. For most people, that works best. With alcohol, I would say really as much as possible to reduce it or cut it out when you're trying to get pregnant, because for a lot of people with their lifestyle anyways, I know if you're listening to this podcast, it might not be a huge thing you're doing anyways. I just don't tend to have a lot of heavy drinkers in my audience, but it's really something that I would say is a lifestyle change that will make a really big impact. So cutting down on alcohol is huge. Stress is also a really big piece of it. And I know when you're trying to get pregnant, it's kind of inherently stressful for most of us when we don't know what's going on and we're having trouble getting pregnant. So, you know, I don't want to add to your long to-do list of like, also just try to relax. And I hated when doctors said that to me, but it's worth knowing on a biological level, stress can impact egg quality. And it's important for you to understand that so that you can seek out stress-reducing activities. Toxins can also be really damaging to egg quality. So things like BPA, which we find in a lot of plastics, or parabens, phthalates, all these different things that are added to different sorts of cosmetics and personal care products and things in our kitchen, you know, the plastic Tupperwares that people use, or a lot of the cookware, nonstick cookware, can contain toxins. A lot of those things can also be really damaging to our egg cells. And then a lot of the stuff that we find in heavily processed foods, different chemicals, different emulsifiers, high fructose corn syrup has been shown to be terrible for our fertility. And so there's a lot that we are just kind of getting in our normal diets and lifestyles when we go through the standard American diet and lifestyle that is damaging to fertility. So first piece of that is, you know, we're being exposed to a lot of things that can damage egg quality. And the other piece is that when we're eating, you know, lots of processed foods and junk foods and sugary foods, we're not eating a lot of nutrient-dense food. So we're not eating tons of fruits and veggies. We're not eating as much protein. We're not eating as many nuts and seeds and all of these foods that contain really important vitamins and minerals, things like vitamin E, vitamin B, selenium. It's really important that we get enough vitamin D. Vitamin D is so, so important for good, healthy egg quality. And so we really need to be eating and sometimes supplementing for good egg quality. And again, I would be doing that for at least 3 to 6 months before you're trying to get pregnant, because it takes about 3 months for an egg cell to fully mature. So let's say today is May 1st, okay? If I were to ovulate today on May 1st, the egg that I would ovulate with today actually started forming about 3 months ago. So wait, I have to do my quick math. April, March, February, right? That egg started forming in February. So everything that I've done from February 1st until May 1st has affected that egg cell. And this is another thing that people sometimes have a hard time actually internalizing. You could be saying, you know, I'm going to really focus on my nutrition this month because I want to start trying to get pregnant next month. It's not really enough time. You really need to be doing it for 3 months, because what you did for the last 2 months, you know, even if this next month you want to start really trying to up your nutrition and supplementation, listen, it's never too late. It's always better to do something than nothing. But it really takes about 3 months for these things to kick in terms of having your egg quality catch up with your dietary changes. So that's the first piece, or I should say really it's the second piece, because the first piece is if you're not ovulating in the first place, that will be one obstacle. Then if you have poor egg quality, that's the second obstacle. The third obstacle are the hormone imbalances. And this is obviously such a huge part of PCOS. And there are the classic things that people tend to think of with PCOS, right? The high androgens, for example. So those are like your high male type of hormones that women also have, but things like testosterone, DHT, DHEA, there's a number of other less well-known androgens. So we're not going to go through the whole list. but things that typically promote male sex characteristics. So they're things that promote your muscle growth and hair growth and libido and energy levels. And so when we have too high levels of testosterone and DHT and these different androgens, that can throw off a lot of different things with both our cycle, but also our egg quality. Another really common hormone imbalance that we see in women with PCOS is the high insulin levels or insulin resistance. And I've done lots of other episodes on blood sugar balance and insulin resistance. So I'm just going to give a quick overview here. But basically, insulin is responsible for regulating your blood sugar. And if you have high levels of insulin or you're insulin resistant, it basically means that insulin is not good at getting the job done. And it's trying and trying to manage all of this sugar in your blood, but it's not doing such a good job. And you will end up sending a lot of that sugar to your liver. And your liver is responsible for overall balancing everything in your blood, including your hormones. So when your liver is not able to function well, it's not balancing your hormones properly. It's not saying, hey, we have too much testosterone here or too much estrogen there or too much cortisol. Let's flush it out. Let's attach it to fiber and get it out of your body through poop. You're not doing that properly. So there's a lot of different hormone imbalances that can happen when you have insulin resistance because your liver is not working well. But there are so many like more subtle ways that this then affects our reproductive health. So I want to go through some of those because I don't think I've ever gone this deep about it on the podcast. So I want to give you an example. Insulin kind of sets the tone for a lot of other hormonal activities in the body. You have a protein in your blood called SHBG, and it stands for sex hormone binding globulin. And basically what SHBG does is it binds certain androgens, meaning I think of it like this. I think of it like a chaperone for those hormones. So when you have testosterone in your blood, some of it is free floating. That's called free testosterone, but a lot of it is bound up. It's not going to be active and used right away because it's being held by this chaperone of SHBG. And I think of testosterone as a frat boy, right? It's this like crazy male hormone that can rev up the libido and hair growth and all of these things. And what's really interesting is that when you have dysregulated blood sugar and insulin resistance, that decreases the amount of SHBG that you have. So you decrease your chaperone levels of testosterone. And all of a sudden, when SHBG goes down, your free testosterone increases. And one thing that's also really important to note here, if you're getting lab work done and you were told that everything is totally normal, sometimes the issue is that women have too much free testosterone. And if you look at overall testosterone levels, they can come back as normal. But the ratio of free testosterone to bound testosterone is too high. And that's why it's causing all of this weird stuff, the hair growth, the acne, messing with your egg quality, all these different things that happen when we have high testosterone levels. But you could get lab work done that says, oh no, it's fine. It's totally normal. This is why it's really important to get comprehensive lab work done and not just these surface level labs where someone is telling you like, okay, whatever, everything looks normal. It's fine. It's not just about the overall number. It's like how much of this testosterone is really entering the cells and causing them to, you know, do what they're doing. Another really common but less spoken about issue that we see with PCOS is that some women have high LH, which stands for luteinizing hormone, or a high ratio of LH to FSH, which is your follicle stimulating hormone. So if you have taken my courses, we've spoken about this, but if you don't know anything about your cycle, basically the way that it works is that in the beginning of your cycle, or I should say after you finish your period, your body starts revving up to ovulate again. And your brain sends these two hormones called LH and FSH, luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone, to the ovaries. And their job is basically to deliver the message, hey, FSH is telling your follicles, start growing. Let's, you know, get one of these eggs ready to ovulate soon. And it's also responsible for telling your follicles to start producing estrogen. LH triggers ovulation. So you know this if you've ever done an ovulation predictor kit, like one of those sticks that you pee on to see if you're ovulating or not, that is testing for an LH surge. We want to see an increase in the hormone LH before we ovulate. It doesn't mean that you're ovulating. It means that your body is gearing up to ovulate. So it predicts, but it doesn't actually confirm ovulation. But LH also tells your body to start producing more androgens. And then I know this is getting a little deep into it, but basically you have these different feedback mechanisms, which will then take those androgens and convert them back into estrogen. So LH tells your body, let's get ready for ovulation. Also, ovaries start producing some more testosterone, but we're going to bring them back and turn them back into estrogen. And that's going to help with overall egg quality and development. But insulin resistance can disrupt this whole process in a number of different ways. So first of all, it stops you from taking those androgens and converting them back into estrogen. So your androgen levels can be rising from that. Your androgen levels can be rising because you've decreased your SHBG. Your androgen level can be rising because your liver is not working well and it's not clearing out this old used testosterone. So there are so many different ways that insulin resistance is kind of on like other levels trickling down and messing with other hormones and messing with our cycles and fertility. And we also see that when you're not taking all of those androgens and converting them back into estrogen, that will then affect egg development and your cervical mucus production, okay? This is why we went through all those steps of what you need in order to get pregnant. One of the things you need is cervical mucus. Estrogen helps us produce this really special, amazing cervical mucus that facilitates sperm swimming all the way up to the fallopian tube. If we don't have that, that sperm is not getting there. And this is something that like no doctor ever told me. I didn't know any of this. This could have been a really easy signal to look out for. And this is something that you could do at home. You can track your cervical mucus at home. And if you see, wait a second, I never produce that egg white looking substance, that's a reason to say, okay, we need to look under the hood, see what's going on. It's also something that maybe if you notice a change in, you're like, hey, I've been taking some tips from this podcast. I've been eating healthier. I've been going to sleep earlier and really working on optimizing my fertility. I'm seeing more cervical mucus production, which I've had so many clients actually who pay attention to this and saw that before they got pregnant. They're like, I'm not pregnant yet. I've been working really hard on making changes, but this is super motivating to see that I have more cervical mucus this month and it's fertile cervical mucus. That's an excellent sign that your estrogen levels are, you know, your estrogen is doing what it's supposed to do. Another issue that we see is that sometimes ovulation is delayed, even though LH is high. And this is what can cause a lot of people to have false positives when they do the ovulation predictor kits. So if you do that stick where you pee on a stick and it says, yes, you're ovulating, or yes, we're predicting that ovulation is about to happen. You're like, okay, this is go time. Let's try to make a baby. And then you're kind of like, all right, now I have to wait for 2 weeks and see what happens. And maybe you're tired and you're exhausted because going through fertility struggles is tired and exhausting and it affects your marriage. And so then you're not intimate for the next couple of weeks because you're like just waiting to see what will happen. But that was actually not the time you were ovulating. And it could be that you were ovulating the week after, but you didn't know it. So you didn't try at the right time. And that's something that I would say is more, I don't know, it's like kind of secondary, but it's really primary because if you're not having relations at the right time in the month, you can't get pregnant. And sometimes using the ovulation predictor kits can give you this false positive or this false sense of like, hey, I think now is the time to try and get pregnant, but it's really not. And so then you miss your fertile window and then you have to wait until the next cycle. And again, I remember this was like the hardest part for me is if I missed it in one cycle, it was like, well, I don't even know when I'm getting my period again. It could be in a month. It could be in 2 months. It could be in 3 months. So like, I just feel like I don't really have a chance the way that other girls have a chance to get pregnant every month. And that was beyond frustrating. Another hormone imbalance that we see sometimes happening is low progesterone. This is not a diagnostic piece of PCOS, but sometimes we see it in conjunction with women who have PCOS. And progesterone is basically the hormone that is responsible for keeping your uterine lining maturing. So estrogen pumps up the uterine lining and thickens it up. Progesterone is what keeps it held together and allows it to mature. And we need enough progesterone to have that nice thick uterine lining. This is what supports implantation. This is what is going to support the entire continuation of pregnancy because progesterone is our progestation, pro-pregnancy hormone. So if we have low progesterone, that is going to come with different issues related to not only getting pregnant, but specifically implantation and then staying pregnant. Another less common hormone imbalance that we do see sometimes with PCOS is high prolactin. So prolactin, some of you, if you have had a baby before and you've nursed, you know prolactin is the hormone that's responsible for milk production when you're breastfeeding. And if you are breastfeeding, you will have higher prolactin levels and that can prevent or delay ovulation. And that's totally normal when you're breastfeeding. If you are breastfeeding and you don't get your period, it's totally normal. Don't worry about it. But if you are not breastfeeding, if you have not had a baby yet and you have high prolactin levels, that is something that's extremely important to get checked out. It is sometimes related to a benign tumor in the brain. So if you get your hormone levels tested and you have high prolactin levels, that will prevent ovulation. And it is also something that, you know, might require a lot more medical intervention. So those are the main hormonal imbalance obstacles that are coming up for women when they are trying to get pregnant with PCOS. And now I want to move into how we get around those obstacles or remove them altogether. And we're going to start by talking about the conventional recommendations. So if you went into your doctor and you said, hey, I have PCOS, or more likely your doctor said, hey, you have PCOS, here's what we recommend. A lot of times, if you're not actively trying to get pregnant, but sometimes even if you are, they will recommend hormonal birth control. And the reason that hormonal birth control can be helpful for managing symptoms if you're not trying to get pregnant is because if you have high androgen levels, when you all of a sudden take in all of this synthetic estrogen, it can help bring down those androgen levels. So people will see improvement in things like acne or sometimes hair growth when they're on the pill. However, it is not really a treatment. It is more of like a symptom management type of thing. And it's a band-aid solution. The second you get off the pill, you have those androgens revved up once again because you haven't really solved the insulin resistance piece. And obviously, it doesn't help you if you're struggling with fertility, right? This is the craziest thing I've heard recently. A bunch of my clients told me their doctors did tell them to go on hormonal birth control to regulate their cycles and then get off of it and try to get pregnant, which we know is not effective. Hormonal birth control literally is there to prevent people from getting pregnant. It can be a very effective form of contraception, and I'm not against people using it to prevent pregnancy if they feel like that's the right choice for them. But it is certainly not something that supports or improves our fertility, and it should not be given as such. I have a whole long video that I put out on Instagram about this, so you can go check that out. And I'm going to leave that there because most people are not hopefully getting prescribed the pill to help them get pregnant. So let's talk about some of the other conventional approaches that come in. Let's talk about metformin. So you may or may not have heard of metformin. Your doctor may or may not have prescribed it to you. It is a drug that can help reduce insulin levels, and it was developed to help treat diabetes. And so there's actually really good research on metformin as something that can be part of your toolkit to help with PCOS, but I want to be very clear on what the research shows and also talk about the side effects because I do think they are worth discussing. So first of all, it's important to remember it was created and mostly studied in treating diabetes, not PCOS. Basically, what metformin does is it helps reduce your insulin levels, and that can sometimes then translate into helping resolve some of the hormone imbalances that are related to insulin resistance. But I actually want to share something from the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. This is what they wrote about thinking about prescribing metformin to women with PCOS. So this is what they said patients need to talk about with their doctors. Shared decision-making needs to consider feasibility and effectiveness of active lifestyle intervention. Women should be informed that metformin and active lifestyle intervention have similar efficacy. Mild adverse effects, including gastrointestinal side effects, are generally dose-dependent and self-limiting. Consider the side effects such as diarrhea, loss of appetite, metallic taste in the mouth, stomach aches, vomiting, nausea, and can reduce B12 levels. So this is the thing with metformin, is that while it can be effective, studies show it can be just as effective to change your diet and lifestyle, and there are a number of side effects that can arise when you take this medication. So I think in my experience working with women in a clinical setting, I've seen a lot of the negative GI symptoms, the nausea, the loss of appetite, stomach aches, and that makes it really, really hard, not just to eat healthy, but just to eat. Like a lot of my clients cannot have breakfast if they're taking metformin, or they don't have the energy to cook because they're just like nauseous and have no appetite and don't feel very motivated to cook. So it makes the diet and lifestyle piece really challenging if you have those side effects. If you don't have side effects, I also have definitely worked with a number of women who have taken metformin and they feel great on it and they're totally fine. And it's just another tool that's kind of helped kick things into place. Great. I'm not against using it. Although I will also share that there is a little bit more research showing that it can be more effective at treating things like hair growth and acne as opposed to specifically helping with ovulation and improving egg quality. So it is something that is kind of a band-aid solution for preventing diabetes. and PCOS, it doesn't necessarily help so much. There was also a 2019 study done that looked at the effectiveness of metformin on fertility treatments and success rates in terms of live birth. And they found that for women with PCOS, having metformin could raise the rate somewhere between 0 and 18%, which again is like a really big range. They have also seen that it seems to help non-obese women more than women who were medically categorized as obese. So it's really something to discuss with your doctor. I will say it's definitely not the only solution. If you're someone who just doesn't want to be on medication, if you have negative side effects from it, I really encourage you to talk to your doctor about finding another option. But, you know, there are some people out there in the more holistic health world that will be like, you should never be on medication. All drugs are bad. Only do it naturally and holistically. I have seen with some clients that metformin was really able to help accelerate their healing process or be a supportive tool for a short term while they were also making diet and lifestyle changes. So it is really individual. None of this here is intended to be medical advice. It's really just education. And I would say take these, you know, take this information and bring your questions to your doctor. But know that it's not, you know, black and white. It's not like metformin is bad and you should never use it. It can be really effective for some people. But I do think the way that you respond to it in terms of side effects is also really important. And because it depletes your B12 levels, that is an important nutrient for fertility. So you either want to be supplementing properly or consider, you know, the effect that that can have on your egg quality as well. Okay, the next conventional method that's often used when it comes to women who have PCOS are ovulation-inducing drugs like Clomid or Letrozole. And I think it's really important that if this is the route that you're going down right now or the route that you're about to start, I know for me, when I was starting the whole process of going to an infertility clinic, they said, okay, the first thing we're going to do is Letrozole. And if that doesn't work, we're going to move on to IUI. And if that doesn't work, we're going to move on to IVF. But a lot of women are advised to start with something like Clomid or Letrozole because these are things that induce ovulation. And with PCOS, we have irregular ovulation. Now, this is important to know because if you do have a pretty regular period, right? Some women with PCOS get a cycle every like 40 days. It's not that you're not ovulating. Or if some people are not ovulating at all, or they're ovulating like once or twice a year, there are probably a lot of other issues going on, especially related to your egg quality. You know, again, quality of the mitochondria and the chromosomes, potentially uterine health and making sure your uterine lining is thick enough, cervical mucus. And if you are not addressing the underlying issues with all of those different pieces, then the ovulation-inducing drugs may not work. And the truth is, listen, it does work some of the time, but the success rates honestly shocked me. I thought these drugs really were like a guarantee to get pregnant. And with Letrozole on women with PCOS, people have about a 27.5% chance of having a successful live birth compared to about 19.1% with Clomid. So that's another thing to bring up, like the Letrozole versus Clomid piece. The research is better on Letrozole for women with PCOS. But I also want to note here, a lot of the studies on the effectiveness have been done, first of all, on women who have a BMI under 30, because there are medical risks associated with doing certain medical clinical studies and trials on women with a BMI over 30. So if you are in that category, it's worth knowing like, hey, am I going to really go in and try to do these treatments before addressing the BMI issue? And it's not to say that weight and BMI are, you know, the tell-all about your health. They are one way to look at health on a very quick, easy, and cheap, large scale, meaning it doesn't cost a lot for, you know, research centers to look at people's BMIs and then try to organize information and data with it. But we do have a lot of data with it. And we do know that there is a significant association with having a healthy BMI and fertility. So that's something to note. If you fall into that category, I would say put that as part of your, you know, your thought process in going into this. You know, do you want to try and take a couple of months to work on lowering your BMI before going into something like Clomid or Letrozole? I think it's also really important to note that different studies and different fertility clinics have different rates for success with these drugs. And I would make sure you ask your doctor, you want to hear the different rates for number one, ovulation, number two, pregnancy, and number three, live birth outcomes. They should have the numbers for these things. And the reason that it's important is because we're not really looking to just get women to ovulate. We're looking to help them have babies. And if they say, you know, there's a whatever, however many percent chance, there's a 60% chance this will help you ovulate. Okay, but like how high is the percent of women who are getting pregnant and then getting pregnant and staying pregnant? Again, a big piece of why women do not always stay pregnant has to do with egg quality. And ovulation-inducing drugs do not improve your egg quality. They just kind of force your body to ovulate. And this literally blew my mind when I learned about this. And when I actually spoke to a doctor who, I will say to his credit, because I don't think he gave me the best guidance, but he did explain to me, you know, just because you can get pregnant with letrozole doesn't mean you can stay pregnant. And you have to consider that as a, it's a factor that you have to consider before going down this road. And I was just like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I'm going to stick needles in me and take all these drugs and do this whole crazy thing. And I'm petrified of needles and cry my eyes out every day and like get pregnant and not come home with a baby. Like I literally couldn't understand that people go through these treatments and it doesn't always work. And obviously I was so naive and I look back and I'm just like, how did I think these things worked? I don't know. I didn't really think about it, but it's important if you're about to invest the time, the effort, the money, deal with the pain of you know going through these treatments to really understand what the success rate outcomes are and why it may or may not be a good fit for you. Because again, a lot of these treatments, what they are trying to circumvent and get around when it comes to PCOS is the issue of you're not ovulating, so let's just get that egg cell out and we're going to figure out how to fertilize it. And let's say you're not producing cervical mucus. So they're like, okay, no problem. Let's go do an IUI. We're going to bring the sperm to the egg cell, okay? We're going to get around the fact that maybe the sperm is not swimming up there by itself. Or maybe you go through IVF where we're taking the egg out, you know, manually. You don't have to have the right amounts of LH and FSH to get it to come out. But if that egg is not a good quality egg, and even if you have an egg retrieval with 20 eggs, if they are not good quality eggs, it's going to be very difficult to fertilize them. And even if you do fertilize some of them, but they don't have the proper chromosomes and they're not able to develop properly because they don't have good mitochondria and all of these different factors, they may not continue. They may not make it to day five. They may not be able to implant. And that's where a lot of the, you know, the times that the fertility treatments don't work is because we're not really considering every single step in the process. Most fertility treatments are really focusing on, you know, one or two of those pieces. They're rarely focusing on the egg quality. They're really focusing on either ovulation or implantation, which are just not guaranteed. Not to mention, there are obviously side effects to these drugs. They're invasive, they're expensive. You tend to feel really nauseous or not like yourself. Some people have pain taking the drugs. A lot of people have weight gain and bloating, which I would say, you know, when you're weighing risks and benefits for most people, the possibility of getting pregnant really outweighs those, you know, the bloating and maybe feeling nauseous for some of the days and feeling tired because that happens anyways in pregnancy. But it is important to know going in, like, okay, if I'm about to do this really intense process, I really want to make sure that I am optimizing as much as I can to make sure that it's successful. Another thing that I will say is that they don't necessarily help reduce the outcomes of pregnancy complications. So women with PCOS are more likely to have different pregnancy complications, including miscarriage, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, preterm birth, C-sections, and fertility treatments do not actually reduce your risk for any of those things. The way that proper nutrition and lifestyle changes actually can help you reduce your risk for those things in many cases. So now let's move on and let's talk about some of the more natural or holistic approaches to solving or getting over some of those barriers that are preventing women with PCOS from getting pregnant. So I just want to remind you for a second, because we're about to talk about diet and lifestyle a lot, you didn't cause your PCOS because of poor diet and lifestyle, okay? PCOS is caused by so many different factors. It seems to be that there's some kind of genetic predisposition to it, even though we don't fully understand the genetics behind it. But your genetics, environmental factors, the overall diet and culture and stressful world that we live in can trigger your specific genetics to turn on these, you know, different hormonal consequences in your body, essentially. And it doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. It's not because you eat terribly. It's really not about that. It's just like, honestly, most people are not eating a diet and living a lifestyle that's supportive of fertility. And some women's bodies respond in this way to that. But The main things that are causing those obstacles when it comes to PCOS are, first of all, insulin resistance. Again, this really affects your testosterone and androgen levels. It affects your liver functioning, which is important for balancing all of your hormones, and it can contribute to inflammation in the body, which brings us to inflammation. General levels of inflammation are not good for our fertility, and they can damage our egg quality. They can affect our uterine health and gut issues. So we do see a higher rate of gut dysbiosis amongst women who have PCOS, meaning they either have overgrowth of certain bacteria or they are missing certain bacteria in their gut that are really important for just overall health, but especially hormone storage and production and fertility in a number of different ways. And so when we use diet and lifestyle to really combat those three things, the insulin resistance, the inflammation, and the gut issues, then we're able to actually solve the root cause of a lot of those different factors, including, you know, the hormone imbalances. We're able to improve egg quality through nutrition. We're able to make sure that we have enough progesterone to keep our uterine lining nice and thick and healthy. We're able to support the production of cervical mucus. We're able to support normal growth and development of our baby. The one thing that it's not going to change is sperm cell health, because that is on the man in the situation. But when we use nutrition to really focus on especially eating for egg quality and supplementing properly for egg quality. I have a whole ebook on this, by the way. It's free. You could click the link in the show notes where I go through tons of different foods that are specifically supportive for egg quality and why, because I want you to know why these things are important for egg quality, as well as the supplements, the specific vitamins and minerals that we see as being really helpful for egg quality and proper hormone production. Those are things that you could do every single day. And I would say even without making a major diet and lifestyle overhaul, you could just put those things on your shopping list and be like, okay, I'm going to eat more eggs. I'm going to have a couple of Brazil nuts a day. I'm going to have liver once a week. These are foods that are so incredible for your egg quality because they're high in things like iron and folate and selenium. And those are choices that you can make every day, again, without doing like a major lifestyle overhaul. I would say also really focusing on eating for gut health. So upping your fiber intake, including more probiotic foods, really focusing on digesting properly. So sit down for a meal. That might sound really obvious, but a lot of people are eating on the go and running around and not digesting well. So sit down, chew your food, take some deep breaths, try to eat without a lot of stress around, shut off your phone, stop looking at your phone while you're eating, focus on your meal, be grateful for it. It will really, really help with digestion. Another piece that is super, super helpful is exercise, especially exercise that builds muscle. This is one of the best things that we could do for insulin resistance because more muscle cells means that we have more places our insulin can drop off sugar molecules. And that means less sugar is going to be funneled into the liver and we will have better liver functioning. So exercise in general is great, but especially any kind of resistance training, weightlifting, things that will really help build muscle is going to be supportive for PCOS. Okay, next one, minimum. This is probably the hardest one for me, but minimum of 8 hours of sleep a night. It is so important to be producing melatonin and having your body rest and repair. And something also that I think a lot of people forget is when you're trying to work really hard on eating a healthy diet or taking in all of these supplements, what are you doing with those nutrients? You are trying to eventually get them into different cells so that you can have cellular repair. And instead of having free radicals damaging all of your cells, we want to say, let's actually activate a lot of healing processes in the body and, you know, take those cells that are damaged and recycle them and get rid of them and clear them out and get rid of waste products. And a lot of that healing work happens while we are sleeping. So part one is getting all of these nutrients into your body. But part two, in order to apply it, we really need sleep. We also see that melatonin production is important for fertility. We don't know exactly why, but we do see that there are a lot of melatonin receptors in our reproductive organs, which means melatonin is involved, as well as vitamin D, by the way. Your circadian rhythm health in general is a big part of regulating your cycle. So making sure that you are getting sunlight in the morning, getting your vitamin D is also really important. And just making sure that you have a healthy circadian rhythm. Another way that will help you do this is shut off your phone before you go to bed. Ideally, like 5 hours before you go to bed, but realistically, even half an hour before you go to bed. That will be really good for your stress levels and really good for your circadian rhythm. The next thing I would also do when it comes to naturally focusing on treating PCOS. This is not exactly a treatment piece, but it will help you gain a lot of clarity and direction, is learn how to properly track your cycle and identify your ovulation window. So first of all, you will be able to troubleshoot a lot of things when you start paying attention to your cycle. If you notice, for example, I don't produce cervical mucus, that is important for you to know. And that's also something you can then make changes because you see that it's not happening. And a few months later, hopefully see, wait a second, now I am producing cervical mucus. That'll be very motivating for you to keep up with your diet and lifestyle changes because you're like, hey, it's working and I'm more fertile now. And it's not always so easy if you don't know what to look for to be like, am I getting any closer to having my baby? But if you see cervical mucus, like that is a sign you're getting closer and you're working on your fertility and you're improving it. You also obviously want to make sure that you are not missing your ovulation window or your fertile window. You want to make sure that you're trying at the right time because otherwise, again, if you get the sperm there at the wrong time, it's not really going to do so much for you. And the last piece I would say on top of the basics, which I think of as, you know, your nutrition, your exercise, hydration, sleep, stress management, is to consider supplementation. Because we do have good research on things like inositol or NAC. They can be really helpful for regulating your cycle with PCOS. And then there are, you know, just like a good quality prenatal vitamin, folic acid or folate should definitely be a part of that if you're trying to get pregnant. Coenzyme Q10 can be really helpful as a supplement to boost egg quality. So considering supplements, obviously ask your doctor before taking anything, but considering supplements that can also be helpful for regulating your cycle or fertility can be, again, another tool that you have in your toolkit on how to optimize your fertility naturally as much as possible. Now, I got a whole bunch of questions, and I know we're already going pretty long on this episode, but I want to especially address, because so many people send in questions about like, well, what if I want to do treatments? And then where does the food piece come in and how does that help? So let's start there. Again, because most treatments ignore the egg quality piece, that's where I would say you don't have to pick one or the other. You can decide, yes, I'm going to do a couple of rounds of letrozole and see if my body responds to it. If you see some people have it that they go through letrozole and it doesn't even help them ovulate, I would say, okay, like clearly that's not working for you. And I know people have done it 3, 4, 5 times. Like if it's not working for you, there needs to be a change that's made. Even if it does work for you and you do ovulate, but you don't get pregnant, the question is, well, why? Why didn't you get pregnant? Let's assume that sperm was there and that's not the missing piece, because usually, you know, you're getting the timing right when you're doing any of these kinds of treatments. But maybe there's poor egg quality, or maybe implantation is not properly happening. And then you really want to focus on eating for better hormone balance. You could do that while you're doing treatment. It's really not one or the other. But I think the biggest piece of why it could be helpful is if you are, you know, struggling with egg quality and you are getting pregnant but not staying pregnant, or if you're not getting pregnant at all. Egg quality is such a big piece of the puzzle. It really sets the tone for so much, not just in terms of pregnancy, but like literally your child's health for their entire lifetime is based on their genetics and DNA. And your body is dividing cells and having the DNA go into the egg cell based on what you're doing in those 3 months before ovulation. So it's really important to consider all of these different pieces of diet and lifestyle. Whether you choose to do treatments or not, that's really the only way that we're able to properly change our egg quality. Okay, another question that I got, this was a really good question. Is it easier to get pregnant naturally the second time if you have PCOS? So I know who sent in this question. It was a former client. Shout out to you. Hello. I hope you're doing well, because this was a client who was about to start fertility treatments, but we worked together first and she did get pregnant naturally. So if you're asking like, hey, I've taken charge of my PCOS and I have got my symptoms under control, should it be easier to get pregnant the second time? There's actually not a lot of good research on this. I was looking to try to answer this question with some studies, but we don't have any good studies on it. My guess would be yes, that if you have, you know, gotten pregnant and taken control of your symptoms and you see I'm getting a regular cycle, you know, I produce cervical mucus, I have generally seen a reduction in symptoms like, you know, hair growth, or if you were struggling with hair loss, like if you've seen a, you know, a resolve in many of your symptoms, that's a good sign that your fertility is in a good place too. You can always do testing before you start trying the second time. I did that. I definitely was like, I want to get ultrasounds done. I want to get comprehensive blood work done before trying again, just so I know where I'm at. But you already know what to do, which should hopefully make it easier the second time around. If you got pregnant, not because you resolved your symptoms, because you did treatments that did work for you, it doesn't necessarily increase effectiveness for the second time. So it really depends on why you got pregnant. If it was kind of like you got lucky, the treatments worked, it happened by chance, or you also made changes. One thing I will say, though, is having a baby definitely depletes your nutrient stores if you're not properly nourishing yourself. I could tell you for sure after having two kids, I'm someone who's pretty on top of my nutrition, and I still feel like not fully recovered from my second pregnancy because it's really hard to try to get it all in when you're running around and chasing after two kids. So it could also be that like you're a different person when you are a mom or when you're a mom of two or three or whatever. So it's not necessarily easier just because you're like, I've done it already and it's happened before, because your body's in a totally different state. So that's what I would say to that question. There was another question about, does nursing affect getting pregnant with PCOS? I mean, if you're nursing and not getting your period because of it, yes, it can prevent you from ovulating. But again, that's not something that we're worried about in a medical sense. Nursing will naturally, in many cases, not every case, but many times it does delay ovulation. There's nothing wrong with that. The only way that I would say it will affect you is nursing is also very nutrient demanding. So if you're not properly replenishing nutrients because you're nursing and you're not only, you know, needing nutrients for yourself, but also for your milk supply, that's where it can deplete you and then affect things. And the other issue is if you're not getting your period while you're nursing, you don't have your usual way to gauge, like, where's my PCOS status at, because you're not getting a period for a normal reason. So I know that was a big thing for me when I was nursing Eden. I nursed her for like 15 months and I didn't get a period, I think, until she was like a year or maybe like 13 months old. And that was very unsettling to me. I was like, how do I know if my period's regular? I don't get a period, but I'm not supposed to get a period. And it kind of messed with my head a little bit. You know, there's only so much you could do if you don't get a period while nursing and you want to keep nursing. A lot of women do get it back when they cut down to like one or two feeds. So, you know, that's obviously a very personal decision. If you're like, I want that status check, if you want to cut down on nursing to try to get your period back. But I would say in general, if you're nourishing yourself properly, no, nursing should not have a negative effect on getting pregnant again. Okay. And then there was just a lot of questions also about like the balance between the medication and the food, and can you, you know, use diet and lifestyle interventions while you're going through treatments? My short answer would be yes, of course. Ideally, you would do it 3 months before any kind of treatment. But if you're like, right now is the time I need to do it for whatever reason, maybe it's an insurance related reason. Maybe this is just like a time period in your life where you're like, I need to do it, or I can't wait any longer. It's totally fine, but they will have more effectiveness if you do diet and lifestyle changes for 3 to 6 months before you go through fertility treatments. And I will add, again, I'm not trying to like put pressure on anyone. I have nothing against fertility treatments. Sometimes people make the decision to say, hey, I'm not going to do the treatments yet. I did this personally. I just kind of had this voice inside my head that said, let's wait a couple, you know, really it wasn't a couple more months. I said, let me wait one more month. I've made these changes. My body seems to be responding. And you know what? It worked. I got pregnant naturally. And I really want to tell you also, you can get pregnant naturally with PCOS. I don't know if you've been told that you're infertile because you have PCOS. My doctor basically told me I could not get pregnant naturally if I have PCOS. And it's not true. There's really nothing that, you know, is present in PCOS that means you are infertile, you are sterile. Like, that's not what it is. Most of us are just experiencing what's not really infertility, but is suboptimal fertility, especially because we're not ovulating regularly. But when you go back and you say, let's look at all these different pieces of what we need in order to get pregnant, you know, again, the healthy eggs, healthy cervical mucus, healthy uterine lining, supporting our body for natural growth and development of the baby. When you treat those root causes, you absolutely can get pregnant even if you have PCOS. PCOS symptoms are really just something that tells you that something's out of alignment between your body and your environment and your lifestyle. And again, it's not your fault. You didn't cause it. But it's like, hey, pay attention to me because something is not right here. It's your body's way of telling you that. And when doctors tell women that they can't get pregnant naturally with PCOS, it literally makes me so angry. It's like the thing that makes me angrier than anything else in the world, because I think it's such a deep wound that's inflicted in our souls as women. Like, it killed me. It killed me when a doctor told me I would never be able to get pregnant naturally. And even though he's wrong, I've gotten pregnant naturally twice and I'm a mom, I still have healing and repair that I need to do on my relationship with my body because of getting that statement from this guy in a white coat who was wrong. Like, he was wrong. It's not true. I could get pregnant naturally. And I really believe as women, it is our birthright. It is our superpower to be mothers, to be the vessels that bring life into this world. It's like, it's literally the holiest, most powerful, divine, incredible thing that human beings can experience in this world. And for a doctor to just casually be like, okay, and by the way, you can't get pregnant naturally, but don't worry, we have fertility treatments for you, is like, it's so painful, but it's also just crazy because they're often wrong. Women with PCOS get pregnant naturally literally all the time. I have seen it happen with so many women. It's incredible. And again, it's not always about making sure you get pregnant naturally. Whatever your pathway is to motherhood is amazing. And I just want you to, you know, step into that role and that time period in your life and hold your baby and be the amazing mom that you are going to be. But I think that it's so important to have a better understanding and knowledge of what's actually going on in your body, because that will set you up to be so much more empowered throughout your fertility journey. And especially if you're at the beginning of building your family, or, you know, maybe you have one or two kids, but you want a bunch more, it totally changes the trajectory of your 20s and 30s when you actually understand your fertility. And it could be the difference between spending tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars on fertility treatments and, you know, struggling and having all of those negative tests that break your heart versus, wait, I can really take steps that optimize for my fertility and have it work. And if you're looking for like a much deeper dive into this, obviously I talk about this in my programs, in the Empowered Path to Pregnancy. It literally lays out every single thing you need to know about nutrition for fertility, which the doors are reopening soon. You can get on my email list if you want to know more about that, or you can message me if you have any questions. But I really want you to know, you are capable of doing this. You are capable of getting pregnant when you have PCOS. You've got this. And I hope that this episode gave you some, not just some knowledge, but some practical takeaways of things that you can focus on in order to help you get pregnant soon and speedily and with lots of good health. So if you liked this episode, if you learned something new, if it was helpful for you, please let me know. I love, love, love hearing the feedback. I've gotten some incredible messages from some of you listeners lately that really make it easier for me to click record and speak to my microphone alone in my office, because I know that you guys are listening and enjoying and gaining a lot of value from this. So please give me your feedback. I love to hear from you guys. And wherever you are, I'm wishing you lots of health and happiness. I'll see you next week with another episode. Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition, or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.